Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everyone, happy holidays and welcome to Franchise Interviews, where we're asking the franchisepreneur who owns one. I'm your host Marty McDermott with my co-host Don Johnson, and if you've ever dreamed about owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. We have a great show today. Whether it's a hoagie, a hero, a grinder, a spucky, a poor boy, or a wedge, sub sandwich has proved to be a mainstay in the diets of countless Midwesterners. This familiarity is due to a large part of Bill Speck and Jim Shepard's brainchild, Cousin Subs, which opened its first location in Milwaukee's 60th Street in 1972. And today we're going to be meeting with Christine Speck, the president and COO of Cousin Subs, right in segment two of Franchise Interviews. So stick around because we've got a great show.
Franchise Interviews. For over 2 years now, Franchise Interviews has been giving you an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship.
Through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews, as well as get tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising.
And our weekly franchise radio show, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisors, franchisees, franchise authors, experts, and attorneys.
And our free franchise newsletter, which is a must-read for anyone looking to buy a franchise.
And don't forget to listen to our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. For more information, go to franchiseinterviews.com or call us at 610-905-2919.
That's 610-905-2919.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Franchise Interviews, where we're asking the franchisepreneur who owns one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed about owning your own business, you've come to the right place. Welcome back, Don. Happy holidays. How are you doing today?
Doing fine, Marty. Happy holidays to you, too, and your family and
good,
everything.
Thanks.
Yeah, looking forward to some time off a little bit. That's what's nice about the holidays. Things slow down a little bit.
Right. Well, I'm excited. This is the last show for 2008, isn't it?
Right, yeah.
You know, so it's nice to get a little vacation. I think it's well-deserved, approaching what I think this is our 103rd show, so it's just
right.
It's just been an incredible year. It sure has gone by fast.
Yeah, good year for the show. Had some, quality shows. Very happy with how things are going, the people we've had on, and the information and shows we've been able to bring to the, throughout the country. And, with this show being not just national, international, it's just, it makes it very interesting. So that's been great. On the other side, with franchise financing, what a year it's been, obviously. Just a real challenging year,
right.
Very stressful.
It sure
has. Stressful year.
It sure has, but as, things are going to turn around for 2009, I think you and I were saying we're both very excited as far as everything that's going to happen, with franchise interviews and everything else, So, yeah, it's going to be a great year.
Definitely.
Our last show, Don, we met with Kevin Drudge, Manager of Franchise Development for Valpak. And Valpak is one of the nation's leading direct mail companies delivering coupons to more than 45 million households in the United States, Canada, and Puerto Rico. And through its combined products, including online savings portal Valpak.com, Cox Target Media, which owns and operates Valpak Delivers. What were your thoughts on last week's show?
Yeah, I was looking forward to that show. Because I'm, same with yourself. I've always been a big marketing and advertising person. And I like having companies on the show that, that we're familiar with and we've used the product or service. Real interesting. I didn't know that their franchisees don't pay royalties.
I didn't know that.
I guess obviously they're getting all the, the coupons printed and everything. I think they have a very interesting format. It's just interesting how that type of franchise can help local businesses because obviously they're their advertising and, bringing in some clients to their business. They're helping consumers, obviously who can save money. Like, what a better time in this economy to, to use their product that they have.
Oh, absolutely. You know, even their website, though, I don't know if you've ever used their website, but if you go to valpak.com, you know, you can go right online and choose your coupons. You know, you say, I'm looking for, you know, we're looking to go out for to dinner this weekend, you know, and you can find coupons right online. It's just really incredible how they're using technology today. They're actually pioneers, too. I mean, they've been using the Internet a very long time with their coupons, which I was unaware of, you know. It's very sophisticated how they have it set up today. There's also no advertising fees, which is, you know, a typical something that you pay when you buy a franchise as well. Were you surprised about that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was pretty surprising. And I think Kevin had mentioned the direct mail business is a $173 billion industry.
It's a big industry, that's for sure. You know, and I like, you know, I think I want to say everybody's familiar with Valpak, but I think they certainly have very high brand recognition. You know, I can't imagine walking into a small business and someone saying, no, I've never heard of you, you know. I think, you know, we've all used Valpak's coupons from one time or another. You know, I know the pizza place that we go to now, when we first moved here, was attributed to receiving a Valpak coupon, you know. So, and we go to that pizza place every Friday, Don, you know. So, I mean, think about the lifetime value, you know, of what that's worth to that pizza store, you know. So it really is. It's a great, valuable service to a small business. And the person,
well, like I said on the show, when I used to own a food business, I used the product. That's the first company I thought of to, you know, try to get the word out, try to bring in some customers.
Yeah, absolutely. They have a nice history, too. I mean, they've been around a long time, haven't they, you know.
Right.
Says a lot, you know, about the franchise. So, you know, good for them. I would definitely like to have them back in the future, you know, and just, you know, watch the growth of Valpak. It looks like they're growing internationally as well, you know, up in Canada and places like Puerto Rico. So, yeah, it was great to have them.
I mean,
on.
You know, you just reminded me to remind my wife to go online, Valpak, and let's, you know.
Exactly. If you're going out this weekend, you know, go right onto valpak.com, you know, and get some coupons, you know, especially this is a great time for it, you know, with the economy being the way it is, so.
Or maybe I won't tell my wife, and I'll put it as some stocking stuffers.
Those are some great gifts, right? We didn't think about that one. Here was a great article, Don. I think you'll like this one. It's called Small Business, How to Grow Without a Lot of Capital. The article is by Eve Tahaminoglu. Wow, it's a pretty big name. I'll call her Eve T.
Can you spell that?
It'll take an hour to spell. But it says, David Hartstein wanted to make his Kabloom chain of florists the Starbucks of flowers. Have you heard of Kabloom?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
You have, okay. He says, but how? Kabloom, based in Woburn, Massachusetts, owned 30 shops, mainly in New England, but building more seemed too risky. It had always been difficult for him to motivate store managers to put in long hours, and in a vivid display of perils of expansion, a competitor with the same national aspirations as his, Gerald Stevens in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, went bankrupt by acquiring too many flower stores too fast. So this is an interesting situation for this gentleman. You know, he wants to grow his business. It's hard to motivate your managers. I mean, this type of business is considered retail. You know, if you've ever worked retail, or our listeners who've worked retail, you know that it's pretty long hours, you know, Fridays, Saturdays, Sundays.
Right.
I believe in this type of business, Saturdays is probably the biggest day for a florist. So it goes on to say, it says, so 18 months ago, Mr. Harstein turned to a growth path that would bring in cash instead of burning through it, and that would attract managers with vested interest in success, and that's through franchising. So it kind of makes sense. He doesn't have to lay out the money. He has other people invest in his system, you know, and there's pluses and minuses to it, which is actually referenced in the article. It says, at first, Mr. Harstein, Kabloom's 47-year-old co-founder and chief executive, said his board was apprehensive about the idea, fearing that franchisee-owned stores would be less profitable than company-owned ones. But it went along to oversee the transition and hired Steven Siegel, a former chairman of the International Franchise Association, who at the time operated 35 Dunkin' Donuts franchises in the Northeast. The change can be tough for owners to adapt at first, said Mr. Siegel, Kabloom's chief operating officer and chief financial officer. If you want to expand rapidly without a lot of capital, this is the way to do it. But you're absolutely giving up some control, he said. If you're not prepared, you can be blown away. So, again, it's a great way to grow your business, but one thing that you have to realize is you are giving up some control. Indeed, while many business owners see franchising as a ticket to riches, history is littered with franchise flops, says Kevin Hine. We know Kevin, a franchise attorney with, I think Kevin changed.
Right.
Wilmer here. It says in Phoenix, few franchise operators in the United States pass the 100-unit mark, a big deal in the industry. He said, that's interesting. I've never seen that statistic before. And again, I always think I've seen it all, and I think you probably feel the same way. You know, we've become real experts on this topic, and I didn't know that, so I thought that was quite interesting. It says, at this point, Kabloom appears to be on its way to that threshold. Since the first franchisee, the person who buys the franchise and agrees to run it, opened the Kabloom shop May 3rd, 2002 in Andover, Massachusetts, a total of 55 franchise stores have opened in 13 states, including Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Florida, Texas, in addition to the company-owned locations. His ambition for this year is to open an additional 100 franchise stores and to increase his company's revenue to $50 million from $12.7 million in 2002. So that's some nice growth.
Right.
So the expansion has created some financial strains with a surge in spending on infrastructure, from legal fees to computer systems. In the last year alone, he says Kabloom has more than doubled its corporate staff to 50, previously from 20. Goes on to say, but for Kabloom, as for any franchisor, success depends less on setting up an efficient system than on finding the right people. Only about a quarter of a new franchise system survived 10 years, says Dr. Scott Shane. And we had Dr. Scott on our show, professor of economics and
right.
expert on franchising at the Weatherland School of Management at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, largely because of the incompetence, he says, of the franchisees. A common mistake is to enlist people who view the purchase as an investment and not a job, and hire managers to do the day-to-day work, Mr. Shane says. I thought that was interesting, wasn't it? I mean, the importance
right.
of having good people, for franchisees, because you and I have said it so many times, franchising is definitely not for everyone, you know? I mean, this is something
right.
where you really, you have to get your hands dirty, you know, and work in the
right.
business and not be afraid to do that. You know, it's not where you can just let the thing run on automated pilot. So not a good thing. So the reason that a franchise owner does better than a manager is that they work harder and they work longer and they keep a closer eye on cost. That's an interesting comparison, isn't it? You know, say, okay, compare a manager versus a franchisee. Who has a bigger interest in the business? You know, it's the franchisee.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's their baby.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
so it's more important to them. So I love that quote. Let's see. It says, Kabloom charges franchisees a $30,000 fee for each new store and requires them to spend an additional $110,000 to $182,000 to make a shop adhere to specifications of the chain's master plan. So once again, this is, you know, this could be a very big investment. Let me skip down in the article. Blah, 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 blah. We want customers to have that wow effect, like a garden on all colors. While Kabloom struggles to keep them in line, and this is talking about the franchisees. It's a great article. I mean, it really
right.
goes on and on and on. I mean, there was a lot of great
yeah.
quotes in it, which I wanted to bring to our listeners' attention, you know.
Yeah, I think it was a smart idea because, you know, I mean, really the core point here is that, you know, someone would always rather be an owner than a manager. And you think if you're an owner and you have, you know, so much invested in being a franchisee, of course you're going to work harder and make sure that's a success and get the word out and build your business. And, you know, it's a lot less worry for the, you know, for the franchisor.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
You know, I just realized we've been doing the show 2 years and I forgot to ask you what's going on today, right, and over the next
You mean personally or for the show?
No, I guess over the... I said, geez, you know, I should have this down but after all this time, you know. But I know we have a great show today, and we have a nice schedule lined up for 2009. We're actually booked, I think it's till like the end of February. I don't have all the shows posted up yet, but...
Right. Well, like you said earlier, we're having Christine Specht on today, president and COO of Cousin Subs. So
right.
She'll be on shortly, January 7th. We're going to be meeting with a franchise called Superior Wash, Vincent Garcia and Jody Scott, the founders. And so we'll have some shows in the next couple of weeks, of course, some replays
right.
of a few past shows, and then we'll be back live on January 7th.
We will. We have a nice break now, you know, which is great for us. But, you know, for our listeners, we will be playing some shows from last year as well. So you don't have to wait until January 7th. And we have a nice archive now in our library, don't we, as far as past shows, you know. So you can really go back at any time and listen to over 100 shows if you wanted to.
And in a lot of different industries, specialists, experts. And then, Marty, January 15th, Mike Nero, CEO, founder of Naturel.
Another interesting
concept,
you know.
Just to mention a couple early shows, yeah.
Right. Okay, good. That's great.
And for people, I guess, in Texas, there's a show, Marty, in Houston, Texas, January 24th and 25th, being put on by the Franchise and Business Opportunities Expo. People wanting information on that can go to usfranchiseexpos.com.
Okay,
hear about that. Here's something in restaurant news. It says, breaking news, Subway to test Seattle's best coffee. This is from Milford, Connecticut. Adding more heat to the coffee wars, the Subway sandwich chain confirmed Thursday it would begin testing Starbucks-owned Seattle's best coffee at 1,900 locations starting in January. It's pretty interesting. We see so much of this co-branding big companies working with each other. The test stores will offer brewed Seattle's best blend, Henry's blend, or 6th Avenue Bistro blend in 12-ounce and 16-ounce sizes, Starbucks officials said. Subway officials did not offer details on the effort. The test is scheduled to run for 6 months in the U.S. The potential partnership with Subway would give Starbucks a chance to win back quick-serve customers that may have made the switch to McDonald's coffee because of its lower price tag. We've talked about this on a past show about some of the problems with Starbucks closing some locations.
Right. I think they're closing 600 this year. You know, they did like an analysis. They brought in all these MBA consultants, and I guess apparently Starbucks wasn't doing as good as people perceive them to be doing, you know. So, they've been struggling a bit too.
It would also give Starbucks a chance to compete head-to-head or location-to-location with McDonald's new espresso-based drinks, as both Subway and McDonald's boast tens of thousands of units each. McDonald's has been rolling out its higher-end beverages in an attempt to undercut Starbucks' market share. Chain officials said they expect an incremental $1 billion in sales when all U.S. stores sell the upgraded coffee and other drinks next year. Well, pretty big.
Interesting.
Here's something. I mentioned earlier national, international show. Here's something we don't really talk about. The state of Hawaii, and this is something out of Pacific Business News. New Hawaii franchises defy gloomy economic forecast. At 21 and 23, childhood friends Erica Mayabara and Kelly Haraki own a frozen yogurt shop that already is set to expand with a second location after barely a month in business. The friends bought the Hawaii franchise rights to Menchie's Frozen Yogurt, a California concept that launched this year and has shops open or set to open in 8 states. Their expansion plans come despite the slowing economy and tightened credit markets that have made business growth more challenging. Advocates of franchising say Hawaii still is a right market for new stores and service franchises. While franchises typically cost at least $50,000 to buy, the appeal to entrepreneurs is that they don't have to start from scratch. In addition to a slew of new taco, sandwich, and frozen yogurt joints, big national franchise chains offering everything from fitness gyms to dog training, auto repair, and junk oiling are opening or expanding in Hawaii.
Interesting.
You know, possibly us talking about Hawaii, someone will, you know, get us a free trip there or something. I don't know.
That would be great.
She says, while we were at college in California, Erica and I saw firsthand the huge frozen yogurt craze and knew that we wanted to bring one of the new brands home to Hawaii. We had a business consultant help us find the right brand, and we visited a lot of frozen yogurt shops. Seemed like they really went about it right, you know, looking at different franchises and zeroed in on this industry and got a consultant to help them. The state has seen a franchise activity nearly double over the last 6 years, according to the State Department of Commerce and Consumer Affairs. There are now 670 registered franchises in Hawaii.
Really?
The number represents core businesses and doesn't include a company's multiple locations. DCCA says that while it does not track individual franchises each year, the office has seen a steady increase in the number of filings that franchises are required to submit annually, reflecting growth. For the 2008 year, Marty, the department has logged over 1,100 franchise filings, up 45% since 2002.
Wow, that's incredible, huh? I didn't realize the numbers were that high in Hawaii. We've seen an interesting concept come out of Hawaii as well, didn't we? If you're looking from the other end of the coin, badass coffee.
Yeah.
That's right. They actually came from Hawaii. And they came through, to North America. You know, so it was just interesting. kind of backwards, but it does make sense, you know, for all these franchise opportunities to be in Hawaii, being in such a tourist state.
Right.
That's interesting.
Here's something, Marty, something from NorthFloridaNewsDaily.com. Franchising can lead to financial fitness. Is this the year you become a small business owner, whether your job security is in question because of a shaky economy or you're eager to take the leap into being an entrepreneur, you may be ready to make a New Year's resolution for financial fitness and career satisfaction. I guess the year people make New Year's resolutions, I forgot to make mine so far.
I haven't made mine, so. Well, it's funny because I we played the show the other day. I don't know if you remember. It was last year at this time. The last show we had of the year was with David Handler of Success Handler, you know, and
right.
The show was on New Year's resolutions, you know, and he says most people's resolutions last to, like, the bowl games, and then after that it's,
right,
you know.
Back to your normal routine.
Exactly, you know, so, yeah. No,
that's why I think you have to write down stuff, like Warren Gresham talks about in his book, The Best Damn Sales Book Ever, and we had him on the show about having goals and writing it down. I guess for New Year's resolutions, just write it down, I guess.
It is so
simple
important.
Like that.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, there's been, like, these statistics as far as, like, you know, when you write your goals down, your chances of achieving that goal are statistically higher, exponentially
right.
higher, than if you don't.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, most people just keep their goals in their head, you know, and I think it's very important that, you know, you and I sit down, you know, and have
right.
goals, you know, written down for, you know, what we want for franchise interviews for 2009, you know. This is probably
right.
a good time to announce that January, it's like either January 1st or January 2nd, Don, we'll have our new website for franchise interviews up, and I've had a chance to look at it, and it's just
right.
it's just incredible, you know, so I can't wait for people to see it, you know. That's going to be some exciting news.
Always getting bigger and
great,
better.
Yeah, it's just a great way to start the year, you know. I mean, when I saw it, I just said, oh, my God, and I said, this is
right.
what we envisioned, you know, for the company,
right.
you know, so it just gets better and better.
Definitely. Going on this article, Marty, top two reasons people decide to start their own business are to change their work situation or to escape a dissatisfying job. One of the easiest ways to be your own boss is to own a franchise. When you own a franchise, you're in business for yourself but not by yourself. Parent companies provide a built-in support system, so you're not in the dark. Most provide comprehensive training that allows you to build your new business on a solid foundation. Franchises offer a proven business model, name recognition, and brand awareness, so you're not starting out establishing these things on your own. Additionally, your investment is usually lower, your startup time quicker, and your supply lines already established. Franchises are often a wonderful opportunity, particularly if you live in a rural or outlying community, as these areas are often underserved by franchises. Outer ring suburbs or rural communities typically offer less expensive land, and franchise owners can take advantage of a unique niche in the market. That's pretty interesting. State and local governments are increasingly investing in outlying and rural communities, and generous tax advantages are often available to franchise owners starting a business there. Once established, locally owned franchises can quickly become a vital part of a smaller community.
Mm-hmm.
One such success story belongs to Mark and Maureen Schopp, who own three Snap Fitness franchises in small towns in Missouri. The Snap Fitness business model was so simple, I didn't have to invent anything, says Mark Schopp. The Schopps chose three small towns with 10,000 or fewer residents, and business is booming. Everyone appreciates not having to go so far. It's really convenient for our members, says Schopp. We're not off-site owners, and we really like that small-town feel. Members like knowing that they can get in touch with us if they need to. Our cell phone numbers are posted in all of our clubs.
Wow.
Snap Fitness offers a proven affordable concept in the growing 24/7 fitness industry. The workout studios offer state-of-the-art equipment with a small footprint, allowing franchise owners to offer their neighbors quick, convenient, and affordable workouts just minutes from their doorsteps. A Snap Fitness franchise is easy to afford and easy to manage, and it's a great opportunity for anyone to turn wellness into wealth. Sounds like I'm doing a commercial for them.
But you know what? It's a great article, Don. I mean, it really talks about, I mean, these people that you're reading about would make exceptional franchisees, wouldn't they?
Right, yeah.
Well, I mean, they are exceptional, but they're really the model, or the epitome for what a franchise should be, you know?
Right.
Or a franchisee should be, anyway. It's, I'd like to
have
them.
It's not all about money. I mean, they want to help their local community.
There's something that the guy said. He said, I didn't want to invent anything. And it kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it, if you think about it?
Right.
I don't know if you remember. I mean, again, we've done so many shows up to this point. but the gentleman from Liberty Tax, you know, he said the same exact thing. He goes, I don't want to invent anything. I don't want to create anything. You know, I just
right.
want to follow a system. You know, he took this like honest self-assessment. He says, you know what? I'm not a creative person. You know, so if you give me a system, I can execute it. You know, and so
you're always looking for ways to not have to go through that period where you're not making money building up a business. While you're buying an existing business, franchise or non-franchise, you're going to be cash flowing right away with a franchise. It's a faster route.
Right.
To being profit, you
absolutely.
Know, to being profitable. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. All right. Do you have any other articles, or our guest has?
Yeah, this one finish up. Whether you're looking for more job security or the satisfaction of being your own boss, franchising offers an entrepreneurial opportunity with low initial investment, a lower break-even point, so you can turn a profit faster. That's what I just mentioned. See that I'm always one step of my one step ahead of my articles. Here's something. Brave few open businesses in weak economy. Tough times don't damper excitement for upstart business. This is through KHBS out of Arkansas, talking to, you know, bringing up states we don't really talk about too much, which is
right.
good. That's the beauty of the show here. The weak economy has made things difficult for countless local businesses. Consumer spending's down, credit's tight, business in general is bad. Now, gone over all that. We know how the local economy is, or just the economy throughout the country. But a few new businesses are popping up despite all the tough economic barriers. We're still doing little odds and ends that we hope to get done by tomorrow morning, says Kevin Kestner, the owner of Mellow Mushroom franchise in Fayetteville. Kestner spelled Sunday taking inventory in his new restaurant, a pizza joint with a bar and a funky decor. Unfortunately for Kestner, it says Mellow Mushroom open soon, not in 06. He says, 2 years ago, it would have been great. Everybody was spending money building homes, he says. These days, signs announcing closures abound and reminders of what's happened to other nearby restaurants are everywhere in the form of for lease and closed for business signs. Yes, Arkansas, like, you know, several states around the country, sometimes their economy is a little rougher than others. He says, many buildings that formerly housed restaurants have sat unoccupied for many months. Some would say it's not the best time to open a business because of the economy. And he says he thinks that they're going to do all right. Kestner added that the timing isn't ideal, but he insists that his restaurant can be a success. The artwork inside is just as funky as Fayetteville itself, which he said will cater to the city's unique character. He said Mellow Mushroom will also be emphasizing affordability because he knows many consumers aren't letting go of their cash easily. He wants to be able to provide an inexpensive yet flavorful meal for any family of four. Kestner said one thing hasn't changed since the economy went south. The right business model yields success. I think we'll be prepared. He says, I think we're well prepared to kind of weather the storm, and hopefully later in the year the economy picks up. People start going out and spending money, and we'll be here for them, he says. According to the National Restaurant Association, 2 out of 3 restaurants are seeing their sales decline. In a report, the association found that September was the worst month on record for restaurants in the U.S. It's incredible. You know, on record.
That's interesting.
I don't know how long they've been doing it. That doesn't bode well for Mellow Mushroom, but Kessler said he does have one big advantage. His restaurant is a franchise that would be able to get support from his corporate parent should it struggle in the first few months. So that, you know, that's always a big question. When do you open a business? You know,
right.
Good time or bad time? And, you know, that's a debate with, you know, on each side of the coin, when is a good time to open. I guess he feels a little more comfortable because he knows he has the training and support of the home office, and he knows if things don't start out well, he's not there by himself, and he'll get that support, and it's pretty interesting. And then I guess when times get better, he'll be right there, and we'll have months of goodwill and advertising built up.
That's true. That's interesting. It's an important article. Why don't we do this? We'll take a quick break. Our guest hasn't called in yet, Don, but let's take a quick break anyway, and we'll be right back with more Franchise Interviews.
Franchise Interviews. For over 2 years now, Franchise Interviews has been giving you an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship.
Through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews, as well as get tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising.
And our weekly franchise radio show, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisors, franchisees, franchise authors, experts, and attorneys.
And our free franchise newsletter, which is a must-read for anyone looking to buy a franchise.
And don't forget to listen to our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. For more information, go to franchiseinterviews.com or call us at 610-905-2919.
That's 610-905-2919.
Franchise Interviews. For over 2 years now, Franchise Interviews has been giving you an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship.
Through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews, as well as get tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising.
And our weekly franchise radio show, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisors, franchisees, franchise authors, experts, and attorneys.
And our free franchise newsletter, which is a must-read for anyone looking to buy a franchise.
And don't forget to listen to our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. For more information, go to franchiseinterviews.com or call us at 610-905-2919.
That's 610-905-2919.
Hi, everyone. Happy holidays, and welcome back to Franchise Interviews, where we're asking the franchipreneur who owns one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed about owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. Well, we have a great show this morning, Don. Whether it's a hoagie, a hero, a grinder, a spucky, a poor boy, or a wedge, the sub sandwich has proved to be a mainstay in the diets of countless Midwesterners. And I know you and I are both big fans of subs as well. This familiarity is due to a large part of Bill Speck and Jim Shepard's brainchild, Cousin Subs, which you and I are both big fans of, which opened its first location in Milwaukee's 60th Street in 1972. After nearly 40 years, the brand has grown to approximately 150 locations in 9 states and continues to offer its customers the freshest breads, meats, and toppings. Hey, Christine, happy holidays. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks very much. Happy holidays. Glad to be here.
Thanks, Christine. Thank you. Christine, joining us is my co-host, Don Johnson, and I know, Don, you wanted to wish Christine happy holidays and good morning.
Yeah, Christine, we both appreciate you coming on the show. Happy holidays. You got some plans for the holiday season?
I do, but I'll be sticking around here in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin, relaxing with family, friends. Nothing too outrageous. Looking forward to just relaxing.
Good, that sounds good. Great. Yeah.
Yeah. Christine, you know you have a long history with Cousin Subs. I was going to say, what were you doing before coming back, I guess you could say, to Cousin Subs?
Sure. Well, I started here professionally in 2001 in human resources. Mm-hmm. Before that, though, I was off doing my own thing. I was in went to college. I have a bachelor's in criminology and law studies. I have a master's in public administration. I did a year of volunteer work with homeless families in Florida, which was a great experience, and also worked for the state of Wisconsin for a period of time before then coming to Cousins in their HR department. So it's not necessarily a traditional return to the family business. I really thought of doing my own thing.
That's something. And you started working, was it part-time with Cousins, I guess, when you were like a teenager, right, Christine?
Oh, sure. It was my first job. I could not wait to earn my first paycheck and be somewhat independent. I was 15, and I was my parents let me work in one of the restaurants that was near our home, and it was such a great experience. I loved it. And I even say now that even though I'm not working in the restaurants, that those were some of the best times because it was just so fun to work with, just to be hands-on, work with food, and work with the our employees and the guests.
That's fantastic. I mean, what is it like for you to watch the growth of Cousin Subs? You know, I mean, because you were there from the beginning, I guess you could say. You know, it must be amazing to see what it's actually turned into.
Right, absolutely. It is amazing. It's Cousins Is All I Know because it started 2 years before I was born.
Right.
And it's just always been part of my family's life. And it's exciting to see it grow, but yet still holding true to the things that are important and that are still are important to my father and myself and, you know, as far as the product, what we serve in the product. And it's very similar to what we serve today. The menu is bigger, of course, but than to what my father started, you know, over 35 years ago. So it's been exciting.
That's fantastic.
And with that much time in business, like any company is going to go through some rough times, rough patches. I'm sure you've seen all of that, which is even more special now that there's some you have that success, and now when a new franchisee comes in, they won't have to go through all that. Something Marty and I talk about on the show a lot. A big part of investing in a franchise. You guys probably went through everything that can happen in the food business, and now that new franchisee will benefit from I guess those tough times, right, Christine?
Oh, absolutely. That is one of the beauties of buying into a franchised concept is that you know that they've already been through it, so they are, or should be, at least we feel we are, certainly skilled at handling problems that will come up. Certainly as a franchisee, owning your own business is going to be problems or challenges, but you're not alone, and that is one of the greatest things about being able to franchise is that you have that support system. But not all franchise systems are the same, so you have to be very careful about your expectations of support. But it is true, though. Why reinvent the wheel if you're able to have success by piggybacking off of somebody else and growing, but yet still being your independent business owner?
True.
And how did the concept of franchising start? Is it something your father thought of early on, or did someone approach your company and think that might be a good way to go? You know, how'd that all come about?
Well, not really. When they started, my dad and his cousin, he's passed now, the late Jim Shepherd, when they started the business in 1972, they were really just looking to accomplish two things. They wanted to bring to Milwaukee this East Coast style sandwich that I'm sure you're very familiar with, and to have those flavors here in Milwaukee, which they felt didn't exist at the time, and then really to support their families. So they, when they started the sub shop, it was with one restaurant. They thought maybe one, maybe two. We want to support our families, but then the concept caught on and the popularity for it increased. So they decided to open more restaurants. And then in the 1990s, there was an individual who was an employee for McDonald's, and he met up with my dad, and they kind of talked about that franchising opportunity, and then they decided to go for it. It's been a great success for this particular franchisee and for many others. So there wasn't necessarily a set plan of here's what we're going to do, but just through meeting people and developing the product and growing the company, it's worked out that way.
How do you describe, Christine, Cousin Sub's franchise system to a potential investor?
Well, we certainly describe it as something that's, we firmly believe that it's a high-quality product. We have awesome people that are here to support you. We like the fact that, you keep a relatively low inventory. You don't have to be, it's flexible as far as where you want to put your unit. Sometimes we have freestanding. Sometimes they're, very ideally in a strip center, and then even possibly with a drive-through. It's a nice concept that has, that's a cash business, but that offers, future growth opportunities. And then certainly you have the ability to grow into multi-unit, to be a multi-unit owner. It doesn't have to stop just with one restaurant.
Right. That's putting a lot of pressure on yourself, saying that you're awesome and that your whole staff is awesome.
I know. But I absolutely can say with confidence, the people ask me all the time, what really sets Cousins apart? And, it's always the same. People will often say the same thing, but it's just so true. We have our product, which we believe in 100%. It's high-quality meats and cheeses, awesome bread, baked twice a day in our restaurants. But it's our people. The people here at our corporate office, the support system for the system, for the franchisees, for the corporate stores, they some have been here for over 30 years, and
wow,
we have some people that are brand new. But the experience, the loyalty, this culture that, you know, we've worked really hard to create is one of support and service to the system. And it's intentional and it's sincere. And I think that comparative to other concepts and feedback that we receive, that's how I know that I can say that with confidence, to say that we have awesome people.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, we hear that a lot, Marty, don't we? That
so important.
Franchisees, when they're happy, I mean, a lot of it goes back to the people at the home office, at corporate.
Yeah,
oh,
no,
and it is just so true. Look, we aren't perfect. You know, every system has, you know, could have issues. Everybody's dealing with the economy these days.
Right.
But it's how you work through these processes, how you work through the challenges, you know, that get you to be stronger for the next time that next challenge comes along. And
right.
We firmly believe we need our franchisees to be successful. So what can we do to help them and work with them and train them? Because if we're not supporting them, they're not going to be as successful as they could be, which means we're not going to be as successful as we could be. It's definitely a relationship.
Absolutely. It sounds like you probably want to spend the rest of your career, too, I imagine, Christine, with cousins, too. You know, I've read some interviews with you in the past, you know, and I suspect you're probably going to be with them a long time. You know, you're still pretty young.
I plan on it.
Yeah.
I certainly plan on it, which is exciting. The company's over 35 years old, like I said, started by my dad and his cousin, and we have... now, with me coming on board as the president and chief operating officer, you know, at the end of March, I'm 34, so it's great because I feel like I've got a lot of time ahead of me to really grow the concept. And
right.
You know, when I was younger, I wasn't planning on it, but I couldn't imagine being anywhere else now. It's so exciting, and our employees are so excited to see about where the future of the company can go. And it's, you know, through franchising, and it's through just developing and continuing to, you know, keep our great product.
That's great. One of the questions we've been asking on our show now, Christine, is what role has technology played in your business? I'm sure it's a lot different from when your dad, you know, started the company with his cousin, you know. Did you want to talk about that?
Sure. Technology is just constant. It's amazing and almost overwhelming sometimes how quickly it changes. But it has played a big role with us being very smart about how we operate our business. Certainly back in the day, you know, they didn't have that ability probably to be quite as efficient, but with us, we're able to gather more information than ever before. We're able to analyze what our best-selling products are versus what products don't top the charts. You know, and that's critical when you're making menu management decisions.
Right.
And then we're able to run just very efficient restaurants in terms of labor and cost of goods. Even a half a point here or there can make the difference, you know, depending on your sales month. So when the business first started, the tools like that weren't necessarily available. And now it's a matter of just, you know, parsing through which are the right tools for us and how can we best apply them. But technology is huge. And, you know, we make subs, and it's a somewhat simple business, but you have to incorporate technology in order to keep up with the times and with the demands and the need for data to make smart decisions.
That's fantastic. It must be interesting for your father, too, I imagine, Christine, to see all this technology today and how it works. And he said, God, we didn't have that, you know, 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's just overwhelming. And our IT department continues to come with us with these new technology options. And it's just like you're almost flabbergasted because you have you can just get so much more information. And then what is great is because you can take you have to make those business decisions, and they have to be rational. And so, especially when you're looking at menu management, you can say, well, we want, you know, this product, this is why we're doing this particular thing with this product, because it's our best seller or because it's not a good seller, you know. So, I mean, you really come to make smart decisions based on the facts, which is you know, I just think terrific.
That's fantastic. This is a pretty big industry, isn't it, Christine? Are there any numbers as far as, like, how big your industry actually is?
Oh yeah, the NRA, the National Restaurant Association, provides a lot of details. It is a huge industry, and I love it. We employ 13.1 million people across the United States. It's 9% of the U.S. workforce, which is huge, and they're expecting to add another 2 million jobs over the next decade. You know, to 15.1 million. Every single day, our typical day's sales are $1.5 billion in the restaurant industry. So we expect to cap out at $558 billion for 2008. That's tremendous. That just speaks volumes, I think, because we're a major force in the economy. We supply jobs. We meet people's needs at their very core level. And we're something that, frankly, will be able to stay through even whether these economic times, because at the very basic principle, people still need to eat, and they're going to have selections and options out there. It's terrific.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that as far as how the economy affecting your business. And I guess all businesses are affected somehow, but I would tend to think it's a pretty inexpensive purchase. People have to eat. I think it wouldn't have a big impact on Cousins the way this
right.
Economy.
It's certainly, we have certainly been able to weather the economy much better, and partly because we're just fortunate to be in this segment of the restaurant industry where it is quick service. You know, you have a good product for a lower at a great value. So you're able to offer that product, and it's quick, so it meets individuals' needs. Everybody's affected, and for us, we're looking at 2009. We're being very conservative, very very smart about it. I think the economy is going to pick back up again. It has to.
Right.
The ingenuity and innovation of America, I think, is being very strong, and we're just in these unusual times. But what we need to do is just be very smart about, you know, how we staff, how we grow, how we spend. And certainly how we market, we need to stay relevant out there so that our guests continue to come through our doors.
Just going back to technology for a second, being in a cash business, I imagine things like avoiding employee theft, security, I imagine that has helped your stores as well.
Oh, absolutely. It is, it is tempting when it's a cash business, because there's always that temptation to not put that money into the register. But with the technology that we have with our point-of-sale systems, you're able to really monitor that much more closely, and hopefully my goal is to always actually have a great environment, a great culture within each store, so that the individuals don't feel the need and they recognize it wouldn't be right to steal,
right.
But occasionally it does happen, and it's about our ability and our franchisees' ability to be able to monitor that, because you cannot be at your register 24/7. You can't always be next to every single employee, so. And while you want to trust your employees, you always have to verify, and you always have to make sure that your business is healthy from that perspective. So certainly technology plays a role. You know, we're seeing an increase in things like security cameras that we haven't in the past, and not necessarily in only high crime areas. People have security cameras in the stores. It's web-based, so if the franchisee is not necessarily active in the business every day, they can log on, you know, look at their, look at what's happening in their store, watch their employees, respond to things, and be just kind of have a presence without being there.
It's just so important, yeah. I think I know the answer to this next question, Christine. What's the most interesting thing that's happened to you while at Cousin Subs?
For me personally, it's been my personal career transition here, which started in HR, and I actually expected to stay in HR, and then had different opportunity come up, which I'm absolutely loving. But globally, looking at Cousins as a whole is really what I was talking about before with our franchisee, that our first franchisee, and watching him grow in the system. He now has 6 units. But that's not even the interesting part. What I find to be interesting is that he developed 3 of his own individuals to then be franchisees in our system. And that's pretty cool. I think that's a testimony to him and his commitment to developing his people, but then also a testimony to the system that he wants other people to buy in and believe in the system. So it's been interesting to watch that, kind of watch people develop through the years. You know, whether there are employees or franchisees, it's pretty exciting.
It'd be nice to have that franchisee on the show maybe next year, Marty, you know?
Absolutely. I think it would be great.
Sure.
He's gone through the whole process and history like that.
Yeah, he's right. And he started with our first franchisee, and he continues to be in the system. So it's just really great when you can help other people be successful.
What types of characteristics, I'm sure that franchisee you're just talking about has them, but what do you look for in a franchisee? What are the top characteristics you feel?
Sure. The characteristics, you know, right off the top of my head, I would say they have to have a sense of urgency and a willingness to work very hard. In my opinion, there's no such thing as a quick and easy buck. And this business is a hard business, but it can be a wonderful business. But the individual has to be the right fit. They have to love food, and they have to love serving people. You know, if they are truly going to be owner-operators, they're in their restaurants. They have to think about and place themselves, okay, can I be in a restaurant? Do I want to be on my feet all day? Do I want to work with our younger generation all the way up to maybe retirees? Do I want to work around people? Do I want to serve people? Those are things that that is very important for me as we move forward, that we think about and we ask those questions, because it's not for everybody. It's a great business, but it's not for everybody. They have to have the financial stability. That's a given, but it's so much more than the money. That's why I like to talk about kind of those intangibles before we even talk about the money.
It's interesting, and I like what you did with Discovery Day too, Christine. I think with the typical Discovery Day, a lot of prospective franchisees, they watch presentation after presentation, and you guys don't do that. Did you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. We try to break our Discovery Days up and keep them interesting, because it's a lot of information that are given to people, but we feel it's in their best interest because we truly want them to discover Cousins. So what we do is we certainly have our different departments present, what they do and how they can support the franchisees as they go through the process. But then we also take them on a real estate tour and show them different restaurants,
nice.
And give them a different perspective of, okay, all right, you're thinking of a freestanding, here's one, here's a strip center, here's one with a drive-thru, because we do have the flexibility to have to be in different locations. There's not just one set footprint. So by taking them out and letting them actually see the operation, see the building, meet franchisees, that really enables them to get a better picture of what Cousin Subs is all about,
right.
not only just hearing it from our corporate individuals here through a presentation. And then we serve them lunch. We have a test kitchen here in our corporate office. So we'll have our training people serve up sandwiches, so they're fresh made. They see exactly what they're going to be serving in the restaurants, and they get a real hands-on feel for that.
That's fantastic. And what's the training like for the new franchisees, Christine?
The training for our new Cousins franchisees is very comprehensive and totally hands-on. We have they will experience classroom training and then in-store training, and then after when they're complete with both of those segments, they take an assessment, and they need to pass that assessment and be certified to operate a restaurant before they're able to be franchisees. And it's very important to us because we need them. Yes, they're business owners, but we need them to be the right representation with the right execution for the brand, because they are now ambassadors of our brand and they're executing our brand. So they're supported throughout the entire process. We have a terrific training department. And there's constant follow-up, and it's just the critical part. And it's always interesting to me when we occasionally will have somebody come in and not necessarily place such importance on that training aspect. But boy, are they happy when they go through the process, because after they open their doors, they need to be ready to go. And then, of course, we do offer ongoing training and support even after their doors are open.
That's great. It's so important. And what are your plans for the Cousin Subs plans for the future, Christine? I mean, how big or how much would you guys like to grow over the next several years?
Right. Over the next several years, we'd like to add I'd like to have 70 more units in operation by the end of 2010. We'll have about 14 stores open by the end of this year. We have 7 more opening up within the first 2 months of next year, so we're very excited about that. So I think we're well on our way to working and meeting that 70 stores by the end of 2010. Beyond that, I haven't set any growth goal numbers, but I think it's wide open. When I personally visited every single Cousin Subs restaurant when I became the president. So within a 5-month period, my coworker and I went and visited each restaurant, all franchisees, and it was a tremendous experience because I was able to be in their environment, get to know them, understand their needs, and just really able to see where they're coming from. But beyond that, I just saw tremendous opportunity for growth in the states in which we're currently located, where that's why it's like the sky's the limit. We just have to work on some systems, some processes, meet the 70-store goal. But then beyond that, I think that the growth is really just tons of potential.
Sounds like you're the right person for the job there, Christine.
Well, I hope so. My father still comes into work on a regular basis. We have a great relationship, and he is my boss, so I am accountable just like anybody else here. But it's great.
Family business. Yeah.
That's great. Christine, what's the best way for our listeners to get more information on becoming a Cousin Sub franchisee?
They can absolutely go to our website, www.cousinsubs.com. That's our website. There's a link right there for franchising, and we are ready and waiting for your call. We'll be happy to work with you through the franchising process.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Christine. I want to wish you a happy holiday, and I know, Don, you wish Christine a happy holiday.
Yeah, happy holidays, Christine.
Thanks, Marty. Thanks, Don. Appreciate it.
Take care, Christine.
Thanks very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Great show, huh, Don?
Yeah, wow. I mean, just a good show, family business, history, a lot of room for growth, perfect person to take them to the next level.
I totally agree with that, and it was interesting for her to, get to actually meet all the franchisees, for Cousin Subs, It's just,
right.
That must have been a great feeling for the
franchise. It's a great idea. It's a big family,
Absolutely, So they're a great franchise. I'd love to have them back in 2009, as you said, and,
right.
have that gentleman come on the show as well, so that's great. Well, you did a good job, Don, and for our listeners, go to franchiseinterviews.com, and we want to wish everybody a happy holiday, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and Happy New Year, and we'll be back in 2009, won't we, Don?
Definitely. Got a nice show January 7th, Superior Wash. Happy holidays to you, Marty, and your family. Good job this whole year, and we'll talk to you shortly.
You got it, Don. Take care.
Bye-bye.